Shares of Pandora popping after SiriusXM said it will buy the music streamer in a $3.5 billion all-stock deal to better compete with the biggest streamers in the business, Apple and Spotify. The move by media mogul John Malone, who owns SiriusXM through his company Liberty Media, will create the world's largest audio entertainment company as it seeks to build scale to battle the heavyweight streamers.
Thanks to a Federal Reserve that's intent on pushing the economy further away from the near-zero interest rate bonanza put in place during the financial crisis, American consumers are facing a financial reality. The cost of money is going up. Thanks to the Fed's third rate hike so far this year and another one on the way, the days of cheap money are certainly over.
You could mistake these for paintings by an old master, but these aren't the work of a Caravaggio, but a computer. They've been created by Obvious, a French collective of artist entrepreneurs using an algorithm. That paintbrush is the Generative Adversarial Network, or GAN, which learns to create new images by being fed a database of existing paintings.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday, and welcome to October, too. It's October 1st, 5:10 in the morning. Thanks for being here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway on the broadcast today. We have Luke Sanders here, Luke Saunders from the Farmer's Fridge Company. You may have seen these vending machines around the city that have fresh foods in them. We're going to be talking about innovation in the fresh food business with our CEO Spotlight today. Luke will join us momentarily. A little bit later in the program, we'll take a look at the midterm elections. We all know that we vote with our pocketbooks sometimes, but is that going to be the case this year? Alex Nimchevsky will be here from BallotReady.com. That'll be in our second segment this morning at about 5:40 this morning. First, let's begin with the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk and news of the deal that puts Canada in the North American trade deal that had been agreed to earlier with Mexico. In a joint statement, the U.S. Trade Representative and the Canadian Foreign Affairs Minister says the agreement will strengthen the middle class and create good and well-paying jobs and new opportunities. The new deal reached just before a midnight deadline imposed by the U.S. will be called the United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement. It replaces the 24-year-old North American Free Trade Agreement, with which President Trump had called a job-killing disaster. That is up for debate. But anyway, there's a deal this morning today, and Canada is back into the deal. Also this morning, the latest on the Elon Musk-Tesla controversy. Shares in Tesla are surging in the pre-market after Elon Musk reached a settlement with the Securities and Exchange Commission that'll keep him at the company as CEO, but out as chairman. The price of Tesla shares were up about 16% in electronic trading, heading to the opening bell a little bit later on this morning. On the market board this morning, Dow futures are pointing toward opening gains. On Wall Street a little bit later this morning, Dow futures up 208 points. NASDAQ futures are up nearly a percent, 62 points. S&P futures up more than a half a percent as well, up nearly 18 points this morning. Markets are in the green in Europe with the FTSE, the DAX, the CAC all higher. And in Asia, markets are generally higher as well, with the Nikkei up about a half a percent, the Hang Seng up about a quarter percent, and the Shanghai up more than a percent. Oil is trading at $73.46 a barrel, which is up about 21 cents. Another story before we begin this morning, net neutrality. California and the Trump administration are feuding over the state's new internet neutrality law that aims to ensure a level playing field on the internet. The Justice Department sued California yesterday, just hours after the governor of California signed that net neutrality law bill into law. It was proposed after the Federal Communications Commission repealed the Obama-era rules last year that prevented internet companies from exercising more control over what people watch and see on the internet. The Trump says the new law creates burdensome requirements that are at odds with federal law. Let's begin this morning with Farmer's Fridge, a vending machine where candy bars and potato chips have been replaced by fresh salads and wraps and things like that. The company's CEO is with us this morning in our CEO Spotlight. a conversation about healthy innovation. Luke Saunders is here, Farmer's Fridge. Luke, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Thank you for having me.
Very excited to have you in because I've seen you everywhere, by the way. Media, I saw you on Fox. I saw you in a couple other business places. You're getting a lot of publicity, but for good reasons, right? Farmer's Fridge.
Yeah, we're growing really quickly. People love the products, so you know, people want to talk about it.
Tell us, for listeners who aren't familiar with it, walk us through what you've done here, what the product is.
Yeah, so Farmer's Fridge, what the consumer would see is basically a very fancy vending machine. The business itself is actually a platform for making fresh, healthy meals more accessible. So behind the scenes, every single day we make fresh food in our kitchen in Fulton Market. So dressings from scratch, hand-cut fruits and vegetables. That all gets assembled and then delivered overnight in refrigerated trucks. And you show up and buy things in under 30 seconds. But it's restaurant quality food is really what we've set out to do, as convenient as a candy bar.
Convenience of candy bar. I love that, by the way. Yeah. But not candy bars.
No.
The food looks, I haven't had a chance to try it yet. It looks very, very good and healthy.
Yeah. I mean, health has always been at the center of what we've been trying to do. Frankly, there's a lot of options for indulgent meals. And so part of it was just where to find a competitive advantage in a marketplace. And then especially for affordable restaurant quality healthy food, that in particular is underserved. So when I started, the whole idea was, how do I change the supply chain? How do I change the way that consumers purchase this product in a way that I could actually bring it to them in a format that's more convenient, cheaper, and still maintains or has better quality than anything else on the market?
How did you come up with this business plan, this idea?
Yeah, so I, prior to this, was a traveling salesman for a metal finishing company. For those who aren't familiar, that's basically the industrial version of a nonstick pan. Mm-hmm. So I was going into food, pharmaceutical, aerospace, defense, all kinds of factories and selling them coatings. And when I left the factory, I had to figure out a place to eat lunch. And, you know, I covered a 4-state territory, was driving 1,000 miles a week. And my number one issue was really the only options were fast food. So I started thinking about how I could make fresh, healthy meals part of the ecosystem, and realized right away that you had to come up with a new unit economic model to do this, which is just a fancy way of saying something that's not a restaurant, but still can make money. Mm-hmm. And so really started with that. And when you're driving 1,000 miles a week, you have a lot of time to think about it, and sort of came to this idea that a vending machine could solve a lot of those problems. So it's available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can go places restaurants can't go. And if we added a lot of technology that at the time didn't exist, we could actually plan the inventory, create a personalized relationship with consumers, merchandise the product better, and really make it an experience that was worth remembering and repeating.
I get people will think salads in vending machines, healthy food in vending machines. And I would bet you that everyone would, the first question would be, how do you do it? How do you do it where the food is fresh and where it is good?
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, there's a lot of work that goes into our products. So we are making dressings from scratch. We're like ripening avocados to the perfect level and cutting them open right on the line as we make the products. Mm. So the whole business was built around a product versus trying to fit a product into your business model. So I think the fact that we started from scratch literally gave us the opportunity to get all of that right as we scaled up. But at the end of the day, most consumers are actually used to eating products that are not very fresh or have been heavily processed. And so it's actually pretty easy if you can figure out how to get the product from us to a consumer in under 24 hours and consumed, then it's a great product. So it's really just about shortening the time from when the product's prepared to when a consumer eats it and investing the money that we save in the process into product quality.
Let's talk a little bit about those things. First of all, the economics of it. How much, give our listeners a sense of what the price point is here. When they go to one of these vending machines and let's say they get the smoked cheddar Cobb salad, which looks unbelievably delicious here, what would that, and it's in the jar, this looks like a mason jar, what would that cost somebody?
Yeah, so that product would be $8. And typically what we're comping against is like a QSR restaurant chain that's serving healthy salad meals. So mm-hmm. something that would normally be $10 or $12 will end up being $8. And it includes things like, the North Napa has pistachios and fresh avocado, dried cherries, really premium ingredients and unique chef curated recipes. So like that smoked cheddar Cobb, that's a smoked cheddar cheese from Wisconsin. something we're really proud of. We actually take the nuts on that and toast them with some spices. So really elevated dishes that we're able to provide at a lower price point. And then the bowls that we sell are actually $6. And we do some half sandwiches now for $4 to $4.50.
And you make the stuff in the Fulton Market at your place at the Fulton Market. Mm-hmm. So what are the logistics? Get it to us a little bit more in the logistics of this. Every day you're shipping stuff to these machines all over the city, or yeah. Every couple of days?
Yes. No, every single day, 5 days a week in, you know, anything downtown office, because there's really not a lot of people on the weekends. But we do 7 days a week at places like the airport for sure. And what was funny, I remember when I wrote the business plan and I pitched it, the first thing that someone said to me is, you realize you will never sleep. This is this is going to be a lot of work. And I sort of thought, yeah, but that's okay. Like, I think I'm all in on this. But literally, like, we make food 24 hours a day. So every day, people come into the kitchen, they're prepping things, cleaning the vegetables, getting them ready, preparing the food. And then overnight, what happens at 8 o'clock every day, a cost function algorithm runs. So that actually tells us, what's the most profitable allocation of the food that we've made across the entire network of 200 fridges in Chicago, Milwaukee. We then pack it up, put it on trucks, and deliver it overnight so that by the time you get there in the morning, it's perfectly matched what we think we're going to sell for the day.
Very, very cool. So how does that work? How does that algorithm? Is it an algorithm? Is it artificial intelligence? How does that work?
You know, it's an algorithm. It's a statistical model. Okay. At this point, eventually, you know, AI is sort of the aspirational goal for the business. How do you use that to really create a personalized relationship with consumers, demand planning, things like automatically recommending menu items that we should develop based on what customers are buying and what they like. But today it's really about demand planning. So we look at what's the probability of selling any given item at any given location in the network the next day. And then it crunches the numbers across the whole system to say, this is the allocation that has the highest probability of the highest profitability. And then we pack it up and send it out.
Hopefully you're getting sleep now, right? You have employees working for you now, and they're doing some of this work.
Right about the time I started getting some sleep, we decided to have some children. So then I stopped getting sleep again. But no, he's 2 now, so it's getting better.
You have been successful in raising funding, $30 million recently. The CEO of Google in on this. So those are positive signs for you, aren't they?
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, fundraising is one measure of success. We definitely look at that more as the fuel. So the reason people are investing in the business is because the business is creating a new category of eating and having an impact on consumers. But it's definitely a big validation, and this round in particular will really be the catalyst to help us scale beyond Chicago and Milwaukee.
And along those lines, I'm guessing people who want to see that business plan are asking, how do you scale this up? Because here you've explained you have the Fulton Market Kitchen, you have 200, it's kind of manageable. I don't want to even presume that it's manageable, but it seems manageable. How do you replicate this in other places?
Yeah, so there are two components of that. One is my background was in small business. So from day one, we were always very focused on profitable unit economics and how do you actually have a business that makes money on the food that it's selling. And so once you figure that out at small scale, you can scale that up and actually you start to get better economies of scale on purchasing. We start to be able to hire people to manage processes and tighten up our standard operating procedures. So actually a lot of that gets easier as you scale. The most challenging part of scaling for our business is actually the fact that you're regionally constrained. So once you set up that central kitchen to deliver all the food, the mandate is you have to be able to service it in that short window. So it limits the geographic area you can cover. And so really it's that going from region to region that's the biggest jump and the one that we'll make over the course of this round of funding. And I think what we proved is that we really know what we're doing here in Chicago. We built a team that's ready to take that leap. So, you know, it's still to be proven that we can actually do a second region. But based on how this region is going, I think we're in good shape.
What are your goalposts for scaling up? What would you like to see by the end of this year, by the end of next year, moving forward annually?
Yeah, so by the end of this year, we'll be solidly over 200 fridges. And really have the team in place that's ready for the 2019 execution plan. 2019 is really about saturating the Midwest region. So starting to expand into other markets around the Midwest. And the target for that is probably 450, 500 fridges in total across that market. And then one of the things that we're actively working on now is the launch of that second region. And so the timing of that will determine a lot of the 2019 goals. But in terms of this round of funding, the goal is to finish saturating the Chicago Midwest regional market and launch one more region.
What kind of challenges do you foresee or will you have perhaps in making sure that these ingredients are fresh in all of those different locations? Because it would seem to me something that's fresh in California may not be fresh in Chicago at some times of the year. How's that work?
You know, what's really interesting, we manage, I think the number is up to like over 200 individual ingredients at this point in our kitchen for just over 25 SKUs of products that we actually sell. So we have a pretty distributed basket of things that we source, and we're sourcing those from all over the country from big distributors that are able to meet that need. So really it's about how you handle the products, how quickly you get them to consumers, how you craft those recipes to be appealing in different markets, because that may actually change depending on which. We actually see that here fridge by fridge. So in a downtown market, our average ticket at any given fridge is higher than in a suburban market, for example. Mm-hmm. So we actually, that's where we start to really use the data to personalize the menu from place to place. But yeah, getting the ingredients is actually the easy part. It's processing them and getting them into the fridge in a recipe that people actually want to eat is the hard part, which we've gotten pretty good at.
Right, and keeping people happy, keeping the customers happy. You mentioned that there's a communication going on back and forth. How have you been doing that, and what's the feedback that you've been hearing?
Yeah, so that's a critical part of our business is these feedback loops, and we're constantly building better ways to get feedback from our customers in real time. So we can actually see, we do something called an NPS score. So it's Net Promoter Score. It's every time you get that email that says, you know, what did you think of this experience 1 to 10? That's what you're doing. And we track that relentlessly every day, every week, every month. And what we see from that is actually, it's a good leading indicator of how our quality is doing. So that number will go up when the quality is being done perfectly. It'll go down if there's mistakes being made in terms of portioning or ingredients or things like that. So we track that number as our number one way to keep quality up. And we actually look at it now by fridge. So we can tell if a driver is not cleaning the fridge properly, or maybe the sundries are understocked, things like that. When I started the business, one of the reasons I knew it would work is the ability to use technology to build those feedback loops across thousands of locations and automatically flag patterns. So we actually started to see very early on when romaine changed. So really, romaine's grown in two parts of the country. And when it actually changes regions, we were seeing a dip in sales of products with romaine. And it was because there was an imperceptible, like what you would think would be imperceptible change in the product quality, but consumers as a whole were actually noticing and switching to our other products. Wow. So we're starting to be able to leverage that data to really understand, is this a seasonal adjustment? In which case, maybe we should really focus on promoting other products right now, or encouraging people to switch, or not selling that item for that period of time.
So. What are the demographics like? I noticed you have a couple of avocado products here. I'm thinking immediately of millennials. Are millennials more likely to use something like this than, let's say, somebody who's a Gen Xer or a baby boomer?
You know, this is probably one of my favorite things about our business, is it really is for everybody. So when you put it into the lobby of an office building, sure, there's plenty of millennials in the building, but there's also every generation. And as a result, you have to get really good at meeting the needs of every person in that building, not just one group of people. So what we're always surprised by, even though we know it now to be very true, is the breadth of the demographics for this business. And it's really a psychographic profile. So it's people who are busy and want a quick, healthy meal. And that's not generation specific. So even more interesting is actually millennials as a group. Now we're all getting older. So this is changing, but they actually have a little bit more time. So they might not have kids and a family and all the things that compress your day to make it less likely that you want to spend an hour on lunch and more likely that you want to finish work and go home.
Right.
And so we actually see as people get a little bit older, they're more likely to become like a super user because it all of a sudden is a way to just have a quick lunch and like knock that out and go home. But without feeling sad about it while you're sitting at your desk.
Or having it for lunch and seeing that it's going to be an easy dinner and grab one to put it in your bag and take it home.
Yeah, my wife works downtown and she actually, some of her coworkers would like stop on their way home, pick up a salad and bring it home. And that was the side dish for dinner. Because everyone knows the hardest part, like you can cook a piece of meat and that's pretty easy. You throw it in the oven, you wait 30 minutes and it's done. But the sides are the hard part. So like the amount of prep work and shopping that goes into like recreating one of our salads. I think someone did it early on. It was like $40 or $50 worth of produce and a couple of hours to make one salad. So it's a great way to buy something and throw it on the side of the plate and look like a hero at dinner.
It's also portion control and calorie counting for those of us who are watching that and trying to be good. It, very clearly, you see what your portions are and how many calories are. That's probably a market you thought of as well.
Yeah, I think from the beginning, we were very intentionally not diet food. So, you know, that idea, I think there's a lot of people who do a really good job. But we did think about portion control and satiation, like how filling is this? Is it the right amount of calories for a meal? So we are thinking about it holistically, but more from like a, does this meal fill you up and not with 2,000 calories? So it rather than sort of restrictive eating, it's more, can you eat this and feel full so that you don't feel like you need to eat more? But it was also not a crazy amount of calories.
Has there been an aha moment in your life or your early career that has brought you to this moment that you can point to say, that was an event that was an important event that's helped shape me?
You know, I grew up in a family where, you know, entrepreneurship was like part of the story. So, you know, both sides of the family, there was people who had been small business owners or entrepreneurs, and it wasn't like everybody, but I heard those stories that really resonated with me. And so I've sort of always had this entrepreneurial aspiration and was like the first kid to want to do a lemonade stand on the weekend and start little businesses. I actually remember my mom had some extra plants from planting the garden, and I took them to like the fair in town and sold them. That was like my earliest memory of being entrepreneurial. And so I think that like, it's just naturally the way that I'm wired. But I really, in the first time I actually ran a business was in college. It was a bike rental company. And I just loved it. I loved everything about the nuts and bolts of a business. And what really changed between then and now is as I was, you know, getting more experience running small businesses and thinking about what I really wanted to do, my passion was entrepreneurship, but then sort of made a decision to focus on something I also really wanted to work on and change. And that was probably the most transformative because now building a team around something as big as changing the way that people eat is much easier than, say, the grease lubricant business that I was running. It was very challenging to find people that were super passionate.
I have to ask about competition in this space. Yeah. Because as I immediately think of, you know, Amazon Go, which has just opened up, that's the closest thing really that I can think of that might be a competitor right now. Who is the competition in this space, and are you kind of watching over your shoulder at them, or you feel confident?
You know, I think that I think of it like running a race, right? If you're spending all your time looking at who's next to you or behind you, you're going to lose for sure. So we spend a lot of time focused on our consumers and what do they really want and do we have the best product? Is it the cheapest, most convenient way to get it? But we do obviously pay attention to the landscape. And I would say we're more competing against every place you can go and grab a quick lunch than Amazon Go. And in fact, we're actually one of the options in the Amazon Go store now. So if you go in there, there's a big wall of Farmer's Fridge products because when they were sampling, it was clear that this was one of the best options for a fresh, healthy meal. And that's really where they want to compete.
So here's the $1 million question. What's your favorite item?
So that's like picking your favorite child.
I know.
You have one, but you don't want to tell. And so I think for me, right now it's the Mediterranean bowl and a half sandwich or wrap. It's also partially driven by the fact that I ate a salad every day for, you know, 4 years, and we started launching new menu items in 2018, and it's been great to expand my palate.
Well, it's very nice meeting you. All the best to you and everybody at Farmer's Fridge. This looks like a winning idea. I can't wait to try one.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me on.
Come back again. Yeah. Luke Saunders, the founder and CEO of Farmer's Fridge. You can find them online at farmersfridge.com and on social media at Farmer's Fridge on both Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We'll have more of our conversation with Luke after the bell this morning in the podcast of the opening bell at WGNradio.com.
Hi, this is Catherine Davis with today's NO Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoNO.com. Facebook announced Friday that a security breach occurred that affects around 50 million of its users. Facebook said attackers exploited a vulnerability in Facebook's code that impacted View As, a feature that lets people see what their own profile looks like to someone else. And Cards Against Humanity recently launched a new midterm pack, a limited edition expansion that contains 18 cards about the surreal fever dream that is contemporary American politics, to encourage people to vote in the upcoming midterm elections. That's today's NO Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoNO.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Monday edition of The Opening Bell with the midterms on the way. People in some places are already starting early voting. Lots of times it's pocketbook issues that drive people to the polls. But is that happening this year? We thought we'd bring in Alex Nemchevsky this morning, who's the CEO and founder of BallotReady.com. Alex, good morning. Welcome back to The Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve.
Let's talk a little bit about BallotReady. How have things been going there since you started up, what, a couple of years now, right?
Yeah, now we're 4 years old, and this is the first year we're covering the whole country. So we obviously started covering Illinois' elections, but this year we're covering all 50 states.
Congratulations on that, and another round of funding
Thank
as
you.
Well.
Yes, earlier this year.
So give our listeners who are not familiar with BallotReady yet an idea of what it is that you're doing.
We show voters every candidate and referendum that will be on their ballot. We know that a lot of people show up to vote expecting they're totally ready to vote for governor or president. But then when they show up, they see this ballot that has all these races that they don't know about, candidates' names they don't recognize, and what they end up doing is either leaving it blank or guessing. So what we do is we give you background information about all the candidates, all the measures, so you can feel totally informed and ready to vote.
What's the feedback been from folks who've used BallotReady?
We hear people telling us things like, this is the first time I actually completed my whole ballot. They tell us, this is the first time I even voted. I've ever voted for judges before, because before I would just leave it blank. So people have been really happy with what we've been able to do.
What are the challenges of putting all of this information together? How do you do it?
So the hardest thing is figuring out local information, like who's going to be on the ballot, what are the boundaries of districts, and what that involves on our end is we have to make a lot of phone calls. Sometimes we have to send faxes because local boards of elections are run by sometimes one or two people, and they're not always as digitally savvy as we might expect.
With the midterms coming up, people have been saying this could be one of the most important elections in a lifetime for many people. What's the excitement level that you're seeing out there among people who are getting information and preparing to vote?
We've seen so much interest in from people of all ages, from all areas of the country, and especially, you know, the media has so much coverage of the, you know, federal level candidates and governors, but we've seen people really looking for local information because so many more people are becoming more involved that they know they want to be involved on the local level, but they don't really know how, and we are a resource for that.
Give us a sense of how big that is. I know a lot of folks have been saying that on those local races, there have been more women than ever before running this year. Is that accurate?
Yeah, it is. We'll know the exact numbers later this week, but so far it's way more. And the number of uncontested races is way lower, too. So a lot more people running in general, a lot more women.
Yeah, and what do you, if you had to, I know there's been a lot of noise on the national level about what's happening, but what would you say that, if you had to guess, what would be the reason for that?
I think because people see this opportunity to make a huge impact, and because they're fed up with a lot of the things that are going on at the federal level.
Yeah, it's very exciting to see people getting into politics, feeling that need to run. So here we are, what, about a month away from Election Day. What is it that voters should be doing now to get ready? Obviously, if they haven't registered, that's probably number one.
Yeah, they should register in Illinois. They make it pretty easy to do, so you shouldn't stress about it. And then once you do that, you can go to ballotready.org, and we'll show you the information on the candidates so you can learn about them before you show up to vote.
I know the last time we talked to you, you had not yet expanded to all 50 states. What has that challenge been like in terms of, we do it one way in Illinois. I'm sure they do it differently in other states. How challenging has that been?
Differently is an understatement. They do it so uniquely in every state. So, we have, at Ballot Ready, we're a bunch of nerds who is obsessed with the uniqueness of every state's elections and municipalities' elections. So it's been very exciting for us.
What would your advice be to people who are out there, kind of wondering what direction they're going to go, vote, looking for information? Where do they begin? Obviously, go to ballotready.org, but should they start at the lower end of the ballot or the top end of the ballot? What should they be looking at first?
I'd say you can start at the top because that's what people are often most familiar with, kind of get your toes wet and then go further down the ballot. We make it really easy to see your whole ballot so you can, just go in order of how the races will show up on the ballot.
And once you find the information, can you take that into the ballot box, the booth with you when you're voting?
Yeah, so one, you can print it out. Two, in most places, you can bring it in on your phone. So theoretically, if you wanted, you could just show up with the information on your phone on Election Day. You don't have to prepare beforehand.
That's very important. So, Alex, what's next for Ballot Ready? I know that one of your goals was to be in all 50 states. You're there now. What's next?
So the next thing we're doing that I'm really excited about is we're showing people when they can early vote, where their polling places are, and sending them reminders. Because we know that for a lot of people, the logistics is the biggest obstacle to voting. So now when you go on the site, you'll be able to see that information too.
Very good. It's all very exciting. Can't wait till Election Day. We, again, I always wish you and everybody at Ballot Ready all of the best, and thanks for being with us this morning.
Thank you, Steve.
All right, Alex Nemchewski, the founder and CEO of BallotReady.org. You go ahead to that website, get all the information you need, put in your zip code, your location, and get started today finding information. BallotReady.org.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening gains on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures of 212 points. NASDAQ futures are up more than 0.5%, and S&P futures up more than 0.5% as well. Gold and silver are trading lower. Now, agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. As we ended the month of September, there were still a lot of issues unsolved on the table. We do not have a farm bill on the desk of the president awaiting his signature. We do not have a NAFTA agreement that's been signed off. We may be getting close, but how many times have we heard that over the past year? And with little time left ahead of a deadline to agree to a renewed NAFTA, Canadian and U.S. trade officials tried to settle differences on tough issues such as protection against American tariffs. President Trump has blamed NAFTA for the loss of U.S. manufacturing jobs and wants major changes to that agreement. So we'll have to wait and see. We'll have to wait and see on the farm bill, because I would guess now we'll start talking about extending the current bill until a new one can be completed and put on the president's desk. One thing we do know for sure on the scheduled World Dairy Expo in Madison, Wisconsin, getting underway on Tuesday, continuing through Saturday of this week, when they'll pick the Supreme Grand Champion Dairy Female. We plan to be there on Wednesday. Look forward to seeing a lot of you there, and we'll be talking to a lot of foreign visitors, because this is probably the world show for anybody in the dairy industry, from cow milkers to the people who make the technology and the equipment. So we're looking forward to World Dairy Expo this week, and we hope you will too. You have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. And just updating again what we've been able to get through on this tentative deal with Canada now on the North America trade deal. It's going to be called the United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement. This late night deal has information about cars and tariffs. Part of the deal does open up milk, part of Canada's milk market, to U.S. farmers. Also, there is not going to be at least a significant auto tariff on cars coming in. Some rules about how much money, how much people will have to get paid to put together these cars in Canada and Mexico. Looks like it's going to be about $16 an hour in many cases. There are also some intellectual property protections that have been put in place there. Promises at least not to put in any significant auto tariffs. That was one of the big deals. The president had repeatedly threatened to slap hefty tariffs on car and vehicle parts coming from overseas into the United States, but this does not do that. Steel tariffs do stay in place for now. Trump's steel tariffs do stay in place as part of this deal as well. So we're still going through it. But at least some movement on the North American Free Trade Agreement revision or replacement with Canada now in that this morning after a late-night deal. Let's find out what's on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Monday, October 1st, the start of the new quarter here. We have a couple Fed speakers out. Rafael Bostic will be speaking today. Neil Kashkari. A report on construction spending today, the ISM Manufacturing Index, the PMI Manufacturing Index as well. Those are some of the big reports today in terms of earnings. Stitch Fix, say that five times real fast. WageWorks also due out today. Eurozone unemployment rate due. David Solomon becomes the new CEO over at Goldman Sachs. So lots of things that could move the markets as we move through the day on this Monday, October the 1st.